KVOE AM 1400 and 96.9 FM, live and local, presents The On-Air Chat. And now, here are your hosts, Aaron Harder and Ron Thomas.
Beautiful Wednesday morning. Welcome to The On-Air Chat. We are brought to you by Bruce Davis Construction for commercial dirt work, demolition, dirt hauling, and more. Call Bruce Davis Construction, 620-342-5001. Good morning, Chuck Samples.
Hey, Aaron Harder, how are you today?
I'm good. The preview was Aaron and Ron, which would normally be true.
True.
But Ron is home resting.
He's getting some much-needed rest as he continues his recovery from a weekend medical procedure. And by all accounts, it sounds like things are going well.
So yeah, he's doing great.
Very
he's doing
happy
great,
to
folks.
Say that.
Yep, we are super happy to say that. And like I've been telling people, I don't know how long he'll be gone, but I bet it's less than what the doctor tells him to.
I would bet money on that. I don't have much money left over, but I would be willing to bet money of the under.
Hopefully LaDonna's controlling when he comes back and when he doesn't.
Yes, absolutely. Welcome to the On-Air Chat here this morning. We're pleased to have you with us here today. And, you know, we could talk a little bit more about kind of how we plan to spend this beautiful day. But you've got a meeting, actually a couple meetings to attend to.
And we have awesome guests.
And we have great guests.
And it's a great subject.
Yeah, no doubt. We're talking about Women's History Month. With a twist. So, speaking of Women's History Month, we're pleased to have with us Greg Jordan and Lisa Soller of the Lyon County History Center. Lisa, how are you?
I'm well. Happy to be here.
Great. And Greg, how are you?
I'm doing well. I've been doing a construction project down at the History Center, and my back really hurts, and I'm not done. So this comes for you at a welcome break.
I need some rest as well.
This gives you a welcome break.
This is a welcome break, yes.
I tell you what, let's talk a little bit about Women's History Month. And just in general terms, kind of what that means at the History Center, Lisa. I want to jump into our topic, but I kind of want to give a little bit of a foundation here before we start talking about our actual focal point here.
Well, you know, sometimes we kind of go all out and you know, even overboard. And this year we decided to pull back a little And I know our social media has had some information about Women's History Month and highlighting the women who work at the Lyon County History Center, whether it's staff like me or volunteers or board members. So we've kind of pulled back on that and then focused more on our social media. But Women's History Month, you know, women have done some great things. And as what you're going to learn today, maybe not so great things. But it still put Emporia in the national spotlight. And that's one reason why I created this this program. And I've given it to a couple of different groups. Just gave it on Friday to a local PEO chapter and was supposed to actually give it last year. And I got sick. And so they had to settle for Greg giving a tour.
So you're saying that was a significant step down? Is that what you're saying?
So they had to come back.
They enjoyed
it. They had their hearts set on learning about shady ladies that have lived in Emporia at one time or another. And so they remembered. I mean, they came and they're like, we've waited a year for this. I was like, well, that's no pressure. So I hope I can live up to that. And they enjoyed it thoroughly. So I thought, you know, it's Women's History Month. Let's break out the program again and talk about it on KVOE.
It's good gossip, which a lot of people like.
And it's
never really told. I mean, up until recently, women's history really wasn't told much. That's why
exactly.
They probably invented Women's History Month.
Well, and that's Black History Month,
sure,
and Hispanic Heritage Month and all those specific months that it's to bring attention to those groups that had been disenfranchised for so long and the history was forgotten or overshadowed or rewritten or things of that nature. And so what better way than have a month dedicated to that where you bring those stories to light? And again, you know, history isn't all rainbows and unicorns and jelly beans. I mean, it's not. It's the good, the bad, and the ugly. And I will tell you, when we give programs, and I can't speak for other museums and organizations out there, But usually if it's that scandalous and salacious gossip, that's when we have the highest turnout for attendance, is when it's going to be, you know, murder, madness, and mayhem.
Is it even close as far as your attendance is concerned?
Yeah.
As soon as the murder comes up or you know, those dirty deeds done dirt cheap, then all of a sudden it's like, boom, you know, you have two or three times the attendance that you normally would.
Well, if you think of podcast, you know, true crime.
Sure.
Yep. Is huge. True. Is one of the most popular genres
true
out
crime
there.
And sports.
Yeah. Yep. Exactly. And I think it's a study for human nature and human behavior. I think for most of us, we're shocked. And so we can't believe another human did something,
sure.
You know.
Same with your Law and Order type shows and
yes.
stuff like that.
I mean,
for me, I love Law and Order, but for me, it's like, how did people actually think they could get away with this? That's what always gets me on this.
I mean, I take notes. So nothing.
Greg just scooted
over one chair.
That was one of the questions on Friday after I gave the program. One of the women said, so is your husband nervous about, you know, you doing all this research? And I said, only when I break out the legal pad and I start writing, you know, I start taking notes and go, huh, never thought of that. So
so what's in that dropper over there?
Exactly. So, and you know, the three women we're going to talk about today is also different eras, which I really liked when I was giving, you know, the program and researching it. So you have one story that takes place in 1885. So you're going back a ways. Mm-hmm. And then you have another that's, you know, 1900 to the 1930s. And then the last story is the 1950s where Emporia gets involved. And so you can kind of see, you know, from the 1880s how – you know, things might not have changed too much.
coverage and even women's rights were not really involved with it, any of these three time frames. Was it hard to find information on them, or were they still covered because it was so grandiose?
Exactly. I mean, and that was one of the reasons why I also chose these three women, is because their stories were in the newspapers. I mean, it was tabloid fodder. It was, you know, and you know, one of them, Belle Livingstone, isn't exactly the other two, which have to do with murder, but it was still scandalous. And
you can't vote. We don't care about your opinions. But if it's scandalous and sells papers, we'll cover it.
Well, you. And I right. will say also that the accounts of them trying to make the situation worse than it was and to make the women the bad person, and in some cases they were. I mean, I'll you know, and when we start talking about them, you know, the individual stories, you'll see. But they really did try to discredit the women and make the situation worse and to slander them. And so, yeah, they didn't have the right to vote, but it sold newspapers. And so when they were reporting it, especially with, you know, the 1885 with Minnie Wallace walk-up, they put the entire transcription of the trials in the paper. Okay. Because people – I mean, and again, national spotlight, the whole thing. So, it was covered at – the local level with the Emporia Gazette and the newspapers, you know, what was around back then. But then you had St. Louis and the New York Times and let's see, I said St. Louis and Los Angeles, from El Paso, Texas to Bismarck, North Dakota. I mean, they were covering the story, especially, you know, Minnie Wallace walk-up. And again, when we start talking about it, you'll also see why it brought so much attention, because the, you know, he was prominent, there was an age difference and just a lot of things going on with that story that made it where people were craving more.
Let's get into it. Where's the story begin besides the 1880s?
Yeah, I'm going to start with Minnie Wallace walk-up. and I had the I had each story titled, and it was, you know, it happened at the World's Fair, kinda. So, So at just 15 years of age, Minnie Wallace met the former mayor of Emporia, who was a 49-year-old widower.
49 and 15. This automatically kicks off some things, doesn't
exactly.
it?
Exactly. Now, and again, it's
not
a different time.
Not as uncommon back then.
Yes, and I was going to say, it's a different time.
Where she lived was a bit uncommon. It was a house of ill repute, a bordello.
Supposedly, yeah. I mean, see, you're changing the story.
I'm not changing the story. I'm adding flavor to it.
Yeah. Embellishing the story?
Embellishing it a little.
No.
Well, okay. So that year, 1884, 1885, you have the World's Fair happening in New Orleans. It's like the Cotton Centennial or something like that. And J.R. Walkup, who was a prominent citizen, he had his hand in a lot of different businesses, banking, coal, land. He owned a lot of property, cattle. He was down in New Orleans because I think he was going to be involved somehow with the World's Fair. Okay. And he was staying at a boarding house that was owned by Minnie's mother. And so they met in December around the holidays of 1884, and he was instantly smitten with her. She was – and all the newspaper accounts talk about how beautiful she was and how beauty she was, and she had these beautiful eyes. And so he was staying there, boarding at the house in New Orleans. And he just – yeah, he fell in love with her. Like the first day, it said. Now, he had only been a widower for about 5 months. His wife had died in July of the same year. And he was relentless in his pursuit. He stayed there and then he left and he would come back. He came back in, I think, March or April of that spring, 1885, and he even offered to pay the mother $4,000.
That was a lot of money back then.
That's a ton of money.
The equivalent for today's dollars is $127,000. I looked it up.
Whoa.
So,
okay.
Yeah. So, and of course, you know, the mom is no, I'm, you know, if you can change her mind and, you know, make her interested in it, you know, I'm not going to stop her from marrying you. And by then she had turned 16. And so, you know, turning 16 was also a rite of passage at that time too. I mean, you know, sweet 16. 16-year-olds were getting married. 16-year-olds were teaching, you know, through eighth grade. You know, I mean, again, the world was different for a 16-year-old in 1885 than it is today.
Yeah, the new 21.
It's, yeah, exactly.
Basically, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So he had offered to – for the house. Well, once she turned 16, the mother was like, okay, you're old enough to make the choice. And so finally, after a couple of different visits from J.R., to New Orleans.
And he's still acting mayor at this
and
point.
They kind of described it differently. Like he would be – if the mayor at the time, and I can't remember his name, wasn't there, he would fill in. But he was a full-fledged mayor at one time, a former mayor.
Okay.
And so he finally said, come to Emporia. And this is July now. He was like, come to Emporia, you know, see what it's all about. And I can guarantee you, you'll fall in love with it. You'll fall in love with me. We'll get hitched. It'll all be all right. And so Minnie and her mother came. And finally, Minnie was like, fine, let's get married. Wore her down.
I've had enough. Go ahead.
Yeah,
let's make it happen.
Okay, fine. Let's do it. So they end up getting married in Kentucky on July 22nd. They come back.
Why'd you get married in Kentucky?
Because there was ailing family members on her side that lived in Kentucky. And so they wanted to
involve
them. So they ended up getting married in Kentucky and then coming back. So, yeah, it wasn't even in New Orleans where she was from.
Or Emporia.
It was Kentucky.
And the times were different. So they didn't go to Kentucky because that's the only place you could marry a 16-year-old. You could also do that in Kansas or New Orleans, I assume.
Or anywhere. Okay. Yeah. Okay. I mean, I think like the minimum age used to be like 14 or in some states was 12. Oh, yeah. Years ago.
This is 140 years ago.
Yeah.
And 12 used to be, that was way back in history.
Sure. Yeah. So they went there, you know, because of family connections, came back, and slowly his health started to deteriorate, and he eventually died a month within getting married. And of course, also, you know, it looked really suspicious.
Okay.
And so all attention turned on the new bride. It was also that reported that she had gone into a couple of different pharmacies to try to buy arsenic. And strychnine, I think. Yeah. So a couple of different poisonings. And one of them, she said, with the arsenic, it would help clear her complexion and take stains out of the clothes. Not sure if I want to use anything on my face that'll take a stain out of clothes, but that's, you know, back
it'll clear
then
your complexion probably.
And so she was arrested, and within our collection we actually have the sheriff day book that records her getting arrested. Because she was a minor, even at 16, she was still considered a minor, even though she could get married and everything. William Jay, who had Jay's Opera House, for those of you who love history.
He was an attorney,
but he became her legal guardian. It was Bancroft Hall and then Jay's Opera House, and Commercial. Yeah, Accounting is. So he basically, William Jay kind of kept an eye on her, was her advocate while she went on trial. So the trial started in September and it really divided Emporia. I mean, it was either team Walk-Up's family or team Minnie. I mean, it divided. There were half the people who thought she was guilty and half the people who thought she was just this innocent 16-year-old who just got caught. And a lot of dirty laundry was aired as well. Stuff came out about the victim, J.R. Walk-Up, that he was a frequent visitor of bordellos and brothels, and that he was already taking the arsenic for medicinal purposes to help with diseases that he might have caught by visiting those.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
That would play really big today. I can just imagine
It played big back then, too. Yep. I mean, because they knew if they were going to, you know, be able to get her acquitted, that they were going to have to slander him.
Yep.
I mean, they knew it. And it's
beyond a reasonable doubt. You got to
Exactly. And so it was between that he was using the drugs for medicinal purposes. They even brought in a theory that it was his daughter. He had three children, a son and two daughters. It was the daughter who killed him because she was upset that he married somebody younger than her. And again, this was a prominent citizen, an acting mayor and a businessman. And I mean, it was very interesting. So all this happening, you know, the trial goes on. It's being reported in different parts of the country. I mean, people are learning about it. So on November 6th, and so the trial lasted for a couple of months, actually. And I don't know why it was, you know, why it took so long. But, they were doing it in September, and the court found Minnie Wallace Walk-Up not guilty in November.
Was there a bit of an uproar then, I'm assuming, here in Emporia? Or
at least by half
afterward?
The people. Yeah,
yeah.
There was.
Afterward?
So the jury deliberated for 52 hours. And one of the reasons the verdict was, you know, the reason of the not guilty verdict was probably the reluctance for them to send a 16-year-old to the gallows, especially one as pretty as her.
Sure.
And they even said, one of the jurymen said, if I had voted for that little girl's conviction, her face would have haunted me till my dying day.
Did she testify?
She did. Yeah. They put her – yeah, she testified. They had the pharmacist testify that she had gone to three or four different pharmacies to try to get the poisoning. Two of them – she refused to sign because it was a poison. You had to sign for it. One gave it to her and then – but she was having trouble getting that a second dose. She actually went back to the first pharmacist and he was like, no, I'm not going to give you any more. So then she went to a couple more and she didn't want to sign for it and eventually she did. So, I mean, there was proof that she bought it,
mm-hmm.
but he was taking it because of other issues. So the trial was covered, like I mentioned, St. Louis, New York, Los Angeles, Fort Worth, Chicago, even in England and Australia. I mean, it made international news of her. So you would think that would be the end. You know, not guilty, she could move on.
But wait.
There's more.
Geez, threw that line in there. Wait, there's more.
Let's come back
all right.
And say the wait is more after our first break.
Let's do that.
You're listening to the On Air Chat. We're brought to you by Bruce Davis Construction. This is KVOE. We are live and local.
Warmer weather means it's time to tackle those spring and summer construction projects. When you need commercial dirt work, from demolition to prepare for a building site or parking lot to dirt work and hauling, Bruce Davis will give you a quality job. Bruce Davis Construction is proud to be involved in recent construction jobs, including the addition at Emporia High School, Emporia Travel Plaza, Glendale, and the David Trailer Zoo. Call Bruce Davis Construction at 620-342-5001. Celebrate March Madness all month long. From the first four to the championship game, coverage of the NCAA tournament can be heard on KVOE 1400 AM and 96.9 FM.
Basketball.
Do you have a winning bracket? Live and local.
KVOE Live and Local, and time now for a look at headlines being brought to you by ESB Financial. They're inviting you to the K for a unique Royals experience. Don't miss out on this trip. For details, call Angie at 620-342-3454. From the 24-hour KVOE newsroom and a look at all the latest local headlines, here is Chuck Samples.
Good morning, everybody. Emporia City Commissioners have a lot on their action and study meeting agendas here for today. The lead item for the action session agenda happens to be more conversation about the city's new fire station downtown. Also, for the study session, commissioners will discuss a community survey and have their first strategic visioning session of the year. Veterans in the community have an opportunity to get more information about easy access to telehealth next week. The Emporia American Legion Post 5 has a Project Atlas open house next Wednesday from 1 to 4 p.m. And spotter training sessions are really ramping up here across the KVOE listening area the next week. Tonight, Coffee County 4-H Building, Monday, the Chase County Community Center, and then next Wednesday, the Emporia State Preston Family Room will be locations for spotter training sessions. KVOE forecast from the TV 13 weather team, sunny today and 61. Clear skies coming in for tonight with a low of 35. More sunshine for Thursday. We've taken the rain out of the picture with a high of 63 and continued sunny on Friday with a high of 64. I'm Chuck Samples, KVOE News.
Thank you, Chuck. Currently, light east breeze, sunny skies, 53 degrees at KVOE Live and Local. Headlines are brought to you this hour by ESB Financial. If you're a Royals fan, this premier trip should be on your bucket list. Join them on May 8th in the George Brett Suite at the K. Trip includes round-trip deluxe motor coach, tickets, food, beverages, and more.
Welcome back to the On Air Chat. Chuck Samples, Aaron Harder hosting. Lisa Soler and Greg Jordan from the Lyon County History Center are our guests. We are talking Women's History Month with a twist, the scandalous side of women in Emporia's history.
Mm-hmm.
We just got to the acquittal of Minnie Wallace Walkup, who was on trial for the murder of her husband, prominent Emporia businessman, former mayor. Where does it go from there? Does she stick around?
So, yes, for a little while, actually. JR.
Did she make the will in that short period of time? Did she make the will in that short period of time?
until she get taken out.
So Jared left no will. And his estate was to be divided between Minnie and his children. She said that she was pregnant with his child. And so that kind of changed the situation as well. There was an organization that had a life insurance policy on him, and they weren't going to pay her. Even though she was acquitted, they weren't going to pay her. So then you introduce another trial.
Another layer
of this. And that this is when it takes another level, takes it to another level. So during the probate trial, two men gave depositions saying that they had shared a bed with her while she was in jail during the trial. One of those men was the janitor for the jail, and the other was the son of the sheriff. So they chose two men who had access.
Right.
The one who was the son was Oscar Wilhite. And so, again, if you know your Emporia history, the Mitway was founded by Oscar Mitt Wilhite. And so they asked him what the details were in that of them sharing a bed with her. And basically it was to discredit her that, well, is this child really,
really?
Walk-ups, or yep. could it be somebody else's? And again,
no Jerry Springer to find out who the
no Jerry
no
Springer,
lie detector.
no grand reveal of who the father was. And for the record, she never had a child. So was she lying? Was she, did something happen? So, and I haven't been able to find out what happened with that story. But eventually it settled where they gave the insurance to her, to Minnie, to the three children, and to J.R. Walkup's mother. So they were splitting. They split $2,000. But she also was entitled to some of that property he had and the business that he was in with the coal. So she made off, from what I've read, about $20,000 at the end of it was her share.
Half a million, essentially.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah, she was set, ready to go. One other really odd side story to this is we have a photo in our collection of Minnie Wallace Walkup that was taken during, I think, right after the acquittal, or at some point during the trial. She wanted her picture taken. And there was a female photographer, the first female photographer here in Emporia. Her name was D.R. Rich. She went by her initials, but it was Delia Rich. And she took this picture of Minnie, and she said, can I sell this? And Minnie said, I just want 12 copies for my friends and family. You can do what you want to with it. And so she sold the photo to Minnie's admirers. And originally people wouldn't buy the photo because they thought the money was going to go to Minnie. But the minute they found out that she did not reap any financial benefits from that.
Let me get as many as we can.
Yeah. They bought them up just, to have a memento of this sensationalized story, in this part of history. And so Delia made a pretty penny off of the sale of these photos. And I mean, she was mailing them to people because people were wanting these photos. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of a side story. Minnie would leave Emporia. She did not stay. Once that situation was settled with the insurance, she moved to Chicago. But you would think the story would not, some type of normalcy would happen with her.
And
but
I'm assuming with that,
but wait,
no.
There's more. She moved to Chicago, where she continued to be involved in scandalous and questionable affairs. Her second husband, John Ketchum, died of alcoholism just 12 days after worked up a new will leaving her his estate. 12 days later, he died of alcoholism. Her next partner, Delancey Horton Louderback, which I love that name, Delancey Louderback, and this is 1900 now. So this is 15 years She's
in her 30s.
Yeah. Minnie began a relationship with Delancey, who was more than 30 years her senior. So she was still, again, you know, attracted to older men. And he was married. So they, you know, floated around and traveled, and he built her a house, and everything was fine. His wife passed away. I have no details on that, but
really resemble the walk-up.
After his wife died, he updated his will, leaving a quarter of his estate to Minnie. He soon died of cyanide poisoning. Now, with that story, she was actually in Europe when he died from the poisoning. So, and they investigated her. I mean, trust me, with these two deaths, because of her background and the trial here in Emporia, you know, she was on the radar, especially because it was so publicized. She was not able to escape that publicity. So they did their due diligence and found, you know, the alcoholism. He did drink heavily, and so he died from that. And the cyanide poisoning, he committed suicide because she was in Europe with another man. So they were able to prove that she was innocent as well on both of those. So it didn't even go to trial.
Innocent of the murders, at least.
Yeah. So her fourth romance was with a gentleman, an English captain who died during World War I. And it was really interesting. I found a newspaper article from, I believe, Chicago. And it really paints her as this unlucky in love woman. I mean, they kind of really don't focus on these poisonings and, you know, that she was the center of it, but rather
poor Minnie.
Yeah. You know, she just, doggone it, she can't catch a break. Mm-hmm. You know, she's just so unlucky in love that, you know, her first husband died from, you know, poisoning self-inflicted, and then the alcoholism for the second, and then her third one, you know, was self-inflicted as well, and then the Germans did the fourth, you know, one during World War I, because he was killed by shell in Germany. She lived to be 88 years old, though. So,
seriously?
Yes. She died in 1957 in California, going by Minnie Wallace Keating, which was the last name of that English captain. She never remarried. That was supposed – in the articles that I read, I mean, that was the love of her life, was this Keating. I mean, you know, she had to go through a couple of toads to get to him, I guess. But anyway, so she inherited most of her money from her partners, lived to be 88. And there was actually two books written, How to Murder Your Wealthy Lovers and Get Away with It. And that's a newer one. And then The Adventuress, Murder, Blackmail, and Confidence, Games in the Gilded Age. So, and then she's been featured on several blogs, podcasts. We've actually had people contact us for the research part of it. You know, I mean, we had somebody who was focused on the Delia Rich story for her being the first female photographer. And kind of just the story, you know, the story was about Delia. And so Minnie's story was kind of the side story. But our research librarian has worked with a couple of different podcasts for the story. So that's Minnie's story. And again, it really kind of changed Emporia and, you know, how things are looked at, I think. It definitely divided it. So the next person we're going to talk about, and the next two stories will be kind of short, is Isabel Graham, Belle Livingstone. Belle Livingstone was found in 1876 under a sunflower in the prairie field. Of course, we have no idea if that's true or not, but
probably
she was
not.
Probably not.
If it's her own account, probably not true. Hard to be remembered.
She was a chorus girl, an actress, an author, and a speakeasy queen. She was adopted by John Graham and his wife Annie. They're the ones who started. He was an editor, so he started a couple of newspapers. One of them, which was the Emporia Gazette, which was later sold to William Allen White. But the family lived here until 1892, and she was somewhat of a wild child. When John sold the newspaper, they moved to Chicago. And living in Chicago, she was definitely exposed to a lot of different experiences than what she would have been in Emporia. She fell in love with acting, and she wanted to be an actress and a chorus girl. And of course, her parents were shocked because that wasn't a respected profession.
Okay.
Things could happen because you're traveling, and you know it wasn't you didn't make movies. I mean, this is 18. I mean, she was found in 1876. So I mean, it's a different world. So the parents were adamant about her not becoming an actress, and they said, you know, once you get married, you can do what you want. So she told her dad that they needed to she wanted to go to a show that was playing. It was at a hotel. She was in the lobby hotel, and she met a stranger there and said, "Listen, I want to be an actress. Will you marry me so I can do my own thing?" She was like, "No strings attached. Just marry me. You can go on your merry way. I'll go on mine." And he said, "Well, I have nothing else to do." So they got married. I didn't realize it was that easy, but I guess it is.
Mr. Livingstone?
No. Actually, I don't have a name for him, but her stage name was Belle Livingstone. And so she always kept it. And later on, he died. And because they actually never got a divorce, she got his money. She was able to cash in on some of his estate.
Did she know Minnie Wallace Walkup by chance?
I would say
they overlap.
They overlap. I mean, she was living. They
just met at the pharmacy on Friday.
There you go. Belle was known for her curvaceous body and her poetic legs. And in fact,
poetic legs.
P.T. Barnum offered her $1,000 a week to travel, you know, kind of the sideshow circuit, you know, or, you know, the to travel around the United States showing off her poetic legs. She did decline. $1,000 a week, though. She declined. She wasn't a very good actress. I mean, she was probably known better for her curves and legs than she was for her acting ability. Yeah. Okay.
She'd make a killing these days.
True.
So she was known. I mean, again, she was in the tabloids because she would get married. I think she ended up having five husbands. That's how she made her money. She would lose her money because she had very expensive tastes, and then she'd marry somebody who was rich again. And
Back at it.
But then she decided, you know, I bet I can make a lot of money owning a speakeasy. So she was there were a couple of speakeasy queens nationally known, and she was one of them. She owned a speakeasy in New York, and, you know, it's around 1930s, 1931, and her place was constantly getting raided. And these stories would show up in the newspaper. Again, they were covered coast to coast from, you know, her antics and her exploits. But this time, you know, they raided her place, and she escaped a police raid of her speakeasy by running across the rooftop in New York in her red pajamas.
Sounds like a movie.
She later served 30 days in the Harlem jail after being convicted of bootlegging, and the warden thoughtfully housed her in the prostitute ward because he thought she would be more comfortable there.
Oh my gosh.
During her life, she socialized with millionaires, politicians, actors, and royalty. She came back after she did her jail stint with the prostitutes. She decided New York wasn't for her, and she was going to try to open a place in Reno, Nevada. And so 1931, she travels from New York to Reno in a car, and she stops off in Emporia to visit her old friends. And she has a friend with her, an actor, a male actor, and his name is Archibald Leach. Does anybody know who that was?
That name does not ring a bell to me.
Cary Grant. That's his real name, is Archibald Leach. So I'm looking at Greg like, that's right? Yeah. Archibald Leach. But they stopped here. She stayed in the hotel. They interviewed her. And the newspaper interviewed her, and she only stayed, like I said, for a couple of days. One of the stories was, though, that I read somewhere that she stopped by to see William Allen White, and he hid because he didn't want to, because of her exploits.
What? Nothing and, to do
yeah,
with that.
Yeah, and I mean,
catch,
and he was
a picture of them. Too.
He was a teetotaler, so he wasn't a drinker, you know, and was kind of against that notion, and you know,
he
probably
nothing to do
yeah.
with
it. So she stayed a couple of days, went on. She ended up going back to New York. But one interesting thing, whether it was her apartments in Europe, because she was also in Europe for quite some time, whether it was Europe or you know, Reno or New York, she never forgot her Kansas roots. She would decorate wherever she was living or her saloons and speakeasies with sunflowers. So in the 1950s, she sent a letter to the editor asking if the people of Emporia would send her sunflower seeds so she could grow sunflowers on her rooftop in New York. And Emporians sent them to her. And about a year later, 2 years later, she took a picture of her with these sunflowers on her rooftop garden, and they published it in the paper. But yeah, she never forgot her Kansas roots. So
let's take our second break. We'll come back and talk about the giggling grandma. This one should be very interesting.
Yes.
You're listening to the On Air Chat. We're brought to you by Bruce Davis Construction. This is KVOE. We are live and local.
Warmer weather means it's time to tackle those spring and summer construction projects. When you need commercial dirt work, from demolition to prepare for a building site or parking lot to dirt work and hauling, Bruce Davis will give you a quality job. Bruce Davis Construction is proud to be involved in recent construction jobs, including the addition at Emporia High School, Emporia Travel Plaza, Glendale, and the David Trailer Zoo. Call Bruce Davis Construction at 620-342-5001. We want to recognize the best students in our area. Nominate a student from ESU or FHTC today at kvoe.com/student. It's the Student of the Month from KVOE, 96.9 FM, 1400 AM, and kvoe.com.
All right, students, eyes forward, listen up.
KVOE, live and local, and time now for a look at sports headlines, being brought to you by Thurston's Plus Auto Body and Automotive. Call 620-342-2613 when your car needs help. You don't have to go where anyone tells you, go where you want. Now from the 24-hour KVOE newsroom and a look at all the sports you need, here is Blake Cripps.
Well, it was a short stay in March Madness for the Kansas State men's basketball team. Knocked out of the NIT in the first round, 91-82. The number 3 seed Iowa in Iowa City last night. 50 points in the first half for the Hawkeyes. Kansas State got as close as 4 twice in the second half, but could not get any closer. Dede Ames led the Wildcats with 16 points. KU head coach Bill Self announcing that Kevin McCullough Jr. will not play in the NCAA tournament yesterday. He's been suffering from a bone bruise in his knee and has missed several games down the stretch run of the season in February for the Jayhawks. Self did say that center Hunter Dickinson, who's been recovering from a shoulder injury, should be good to go and 100%. KU opens up the big dance against Samford on Thursday at 8:55 p.m. We'll have that game for you on KVOE. Emporia State baseball team couldn't complete the comeback in a 13-8 defeat to Northwestern Oklahoma State on Tuesday night at the Trussler Sports Complex. Rangers scored 3 in the first to take the early lead. ESU came back with 2 in the bottom of the first on a Caden Williams 2-run single, but Nwosu scored the next 7 runs of the game to lead 10-2 through 5. Hornets cut the deficit to 2 with 2 runs in the 6th, 4 in the 7th, but allowed the Rangers to re-extend the lead and score the last 3 runs of the game. Emporia High girls soccer opened up the spring sports season for E-High with a 4-0 victory on the road at Junction City, a hat trick by junior Katie Smart leading the Lady Spartans to victory. And in rivalry collegiate baseball games, KU won the Border War in the 10th, 4-3 at Kauffman Stadium. The Kansas State Bat-Cats rallying for 6 in the 6th. They beat the Shockers 8-6 in X Stadium in Wichita last night. That's sports. From the KVOE Sports Desk, I'm Blake Cripps.
Thank you, Blake. Sports headlines brought to you today by Thurston's Plus Auto Body and Automotive at 708 Lantern Lane. Information available in the Yellow Book and on the web at thurstonsplusautobody.com.
It's the on-air chat. It's 10:50 here on KVUE and KVUE.com. Chuck Sample's finishing things up as host Aaron Harder has other business to attend to at the City Commission meeting. So Tegan Trahoon will actually be reporting on the City Commission meeting here a little bit later on here today. Our focus with Lisa Soller and Greg Jordan of the Lyon County History Center is Shady Ladies, as we have Women's History Month. Just some of the women who put Emporia on the map for scandalous, salacious, and otherwise just untoward reasons,
yeah.
I guess.
Yeah.
And we've talked about Minnie Wallace Walkup. We've talked about Belle Livingstone. Our last lady to highlight, or to lowlight, I guess you could say, Nanny Doss, also known as the Giggling Grandma.
And that wasn't her only nickname. I mean, she was also known as the Jolly Black Widow. So you all know where we're headed with that.
Oh, boy.
The Lonely Hearts Killer, Lady Bluebird, and the Giggling Nanny. So and one of the reasons why, you know, she got this name is because in her photo she's always smiling, even after, you know, everything
after
that happened.
She's been brought in for...
For, you know...
Nefarious reasons.
Yes. And so she is possibly, I don't want to say she could be the first serial killer, but it was reported that she killed 11 to 12 people.
Well,
from the night. No, it wasn't. Oh. No, it wasn't just men.
Oh.
No. From the 20s until 1955 is when everything kind of stopped and she was...
Well, she had arthritis.
Had slowed down a little bit. Oh,
So she had gotten married. She was, you know, most of the story takes place in the South. She was from the South, Alabama, and she somehow picked the wrong guys. And, you know, the amount of time for that Emporia is involved in this story is only like 7-8 months. She married a gentleman from here, Richard Morton, and they met in 1952, and they got married in January of 53, and he died May of the same year,
oh,
of 53.
Okay.
And Richard was her fourth husband. So her first husband, Charlie Braggs, they actually got a divorce. And one reason why they got the divorce is because he started to have stomach aches. And something just was a little off. And he decided that, you know, something's wrong and she doesn't act right. You know, whatever it was, you know, internally, you know, we never know what happens behind closed doors. But he filed for divorce, took the daughter. They did have a daughter and filed for divorce and left. Well, she met her next husband, Frank Carlson, in 1929. So got married in 21 to the first husband, divorced in 28. Married in 29.
Okay.
They were actually married for quite some time, but he died of rat poisoning in his moonshine in Jacksonville in 1945. So she was married for quite some time to the second husband.
Okay.
Third husband, Arlie Lanning, died in North Carolina in 1950, poisoning. Of course, number four was Richard Morton in 52, and then Samuel Doss. She married him in 1953 in Tulsa, Oklahoma. And really, that was kind of the undoing to all of this.
There are some tentacles here that kind of started stretching back then. Okay.
Very much. She met these men using the Lonely Hearts columns in romance magazines. She loved romance magazines. And so she would find her next husband using these, you know, want ads, you know, these ads in the Lonely Hearts section of these romance magazines.
Craigslist today.
Craigslist, right. You know, or Tinder. You know, I mean,
right.
Yeah,
yep.
I mean, it's the equivalent of that. You know, she chose men that unfortunately were alcoholics and abusive, and so there was definitely that layer of you know what was happening behind closed doors. no one ever thought anything of it. I mean, so here she was, you know, poisoning her husband's. Now, I said, 11 or 12 people. It was also speculated that she had murdered her mother, her mother-in-law, a grandson, a granddaughter, a sister, and two of her own children with rat poisoning or arsenic.
Are you serious?
But she when she finally knew the jig was up and she got caught for the last murder of her husband Samuel Doss, that fifth husband, she said she never killed any blood kin, that it was just the husbands.
Just the husbands.
Just the husbands.
And you have no evidence to tie me to that. Me on it.
Exactly. And so with the husband aspect, it was, they really didn't think anything of it until the fifth husband in Tulsa, the coroner insisted on doing an autopsy. So no autopsies had been done.
For any of the other four?
The first one survived.
Right, that's right.
Barely.
But the other three.
No autopsy. No autopsies. Huh. And so here he is they're there in Tulsa, and the coroner was like, something's not right here, and I want to do an autopsy. She relented. Mm-hmm. And they found that he had enough arsenic or rat poisoning in his system to kill a horse. And that really was the undoing. So then once they found that out, they went back and exhumed the bodies of the other three husbands. And yes, Morton died after drinking, so Morton, the Emporia husband, mm-hmm. drinking a thermos full of coffee that Nanny had spiked with arsenic.
Same kind of levels where he had enough in there to kill a larger animal?
I didn't see that, but that was to be determined. Okay. Yeah. But, and I found it interesting, I've done a lot of research on this dark side of history, and poisoning is a very common way for that. Huh. Our first story was arsenic poisoning. Yep. Mm-hmm. And this one was poisoning. So the state of Oklahoma found her guilty of murder. She was never extradited to the other states. Never went to North Carolina or
back to Kansas. Yeah.
Never. I mean, she served out her time in Oklahoma. She ended up dying probably about 10 years later, 10 years after that last death. She died of leukemia in 1965 on the 10th anniversary of her incarceration. But again, so here she was only here almost, kind of like many, they were only here this brief amount of time, but it thrust Emporia back into the spotlight again. Yep. When all this came out, just because, not only was it four husbands, but it's also the side story of family members also. Mm-hmm. And one reason she was doing it was the insurance money. And
really?
Yeah. Okay. Part of it was the insurance money. The other part was, the husbands were abusive and
can't stand them.
So it's really interesting. I've done these tours. I've done tours. I've done these programs. I did it at the last place I worked, the Kansas Oil Museum in El Dorado. Mm-hmm. And, when you tell these stories, you kind of walk a fine line between exploitation and education. And,
right.
Because you want everybody's story to be shared, but you also need to make sure you remember that there's family members. There's probably still walk-up family members around. There may be Morton family members around. And so you have to at least, acknowledge that their stories with real repercussions and real people were involved with it. And so it's definitely a balancing act when you talk about this part of history, even though this, like we were talking about, the genre is so popular.
Right. It's the information that basically says, it screams, pay attention to me, because
yes.
This is what put you know, X location on the map, or maybe brought this location back to the forefront.
Yeah, absolutely. So I try to, you know, you can kind of joke about it and say things, but, you know, you have to walk at kind of a line of being careful too. And we try not to do anything more recent. When we do, whether it's a tour, whether it's, you know, an exhibit or whatever we're doing, we try to make sure that the story is at least 60 to 70 years older, you know, old.
Sure.
So we won't do anything recent. When we did our Scandalous Emporia, we did talk about like the Murder Ordained, the Bird Bridge, but we gave a little basic information and then we let people talk about it because it was so recent. We wanted their input and for them to be involved. And so that's kind of, you know, how we handled that, something recent, you know, cause you can't ignore it though either.
Right. No, you can't.
So yeah. So those were the three shady ladies. I'm sure there's more out there.
Right, but they're the ones that pop up.
But those are the ones that we chose just because of that national spotlight.
Yeah, so. Makes a lot of sense. Local spotlight here before we wrap things up, Greg. The annual meeting's coming up this weekend.
So this Saturday is the 86th annual meeting of the Lyon County Historical Society. It starts at 1 o'clock at the History Center on the third floor. We're going to have a small, short business meeting, and then we'll have entertainment by Annie Wilson and the Tallgrass Express.
Sweet.
And we'll have sweet treats for everyone to come. So we'll have Renegade Cupcakes and Gourmet to Go stuff and some other goodies. So
dessert bar. How can you pass up a dessert bar?
Dessert bar and Annie Wilson. Come on.
There
and then
have
with
it.
The Tallgrass Express.
So 1 o'clock at the History Center on Saturday.
Awesome. Well, guys, thanks so much for joining us here on the on-air chat. I'm going to have to do my own research now on these three because this is a really intriguing topic, the Shady Ladies of Emporia. Lisa, Greg, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having
us. Thank you.
This has been the On-Air Chat. It's now 11:02 on KVUE. The On-Air Chat's brought to you by Bruce Davis Construction for commercial work, demolition, dirt hauling, and more. Bruce Davis Construction, 620-342-5001. This is KVUE, 1400 AM, 96.9 FM, Emporia, KVUE.com. All the information you need, live and local.
AM 1400 KVOE Emporia, 96.9 FM K245 BQ Emporia,